Okay, good morning, Boker Tov, the fearless Pesach makers. Welcome. I'm sorry there weren't enough handouts for everybody, but everything that was given out is available online, and I'll tell you afterwards where. I want to do as we do every year, and to be honest, it'll be a very similar discussion that we have every year, but I guess Pesach comes every year also, so there's nothing wrong with that. I'm going to give an overview of the philosophy. I'm going to say my philosophy, but it's not my philosophy. It's what I think the Torah and I think Halacha's philosophy and expectation is of us. And by giving you that background and by putting it in that context, my promise to you is that you can make Pesach in one day, less than one day, with time left over to go out and enjoy. And what I mean by less than one day is you could clean your house and kosher your kitchen. I'm not talking about the cooking and shopping. That you need, my wife has to come give a workshop on that. But the cleaning of the house, not to suggest I do the cleaning of the house, but the cleaning of the house and the koshering of the kitchen, I believe can happen in but a few hours. And it's a fundamental difference, as we speak about every year, between an attitude of spring cleaning and following what Jewish law expects of us. And there's a tremendous detriment, there's a tremendous disaster when we confuse the two. And when a person engages in spring cleaning by disassembling their entire house, being on their hands and knees, being on top of a ladder, when a person is breaking their back, spending hours and hours and hours, and then blames Judaism and blames the Torah and blames the holidays and blames Pesach, they've done a disservice not only to themselves and their relationship with Yontif and with God, but most significantly, in my opinion, they've done a terrible disservice, if they have children and grandchildren, to their family, who learn to resent and who learn to reluctantly approach Pesach rather than realize with great excitement and anticipation what a special energized time this is, what a special auspicious time this is to grow and to blossom and to achieve incredible things. So I want to give the background that we give. We'll learn a little Torah together and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty details about kashering and products and all of your questions. Our learning the Divrei Torah we're going to share now, I hope should be in the Schus, the two girls that are still missing in Orlando, who are from here in South Florida, who were on a class Shabbaton. They went for a walk Shabbos afternoon and have not yet been found. It's a shame, they should be found safely and healthy. And also today is my wife's grandfather, her Zaydi's Yerzeit, so Le'iloi Nishmaso. Chametz is the enemy. Chametz is what we're trying to get rid of. What's the philosophy? Why are we trying to get rid of chametz? Come the Shabbos. Shabbos HaGadol Drusha this year, now less than 1 week away, is all about the symbolism of chametz and why it is the enemy and what we are trying to achieve by getting rid of it. We'll go through the halachas of bedikas chametz, looking for chametz, and biur chametz, destroying chametz. And it's a cliched topic, but we're going to put a new spin on it. The book and the topic that we're going to discuss literally changed my life, and I hope and I think it will yours as well. So the details of why chametz is the enemy and why we're trying to get rid of it and what it stands for and how we can transform our lives, that we'll get into on Shabbos. But we have a number of different methods. Again, the details and the analysis we'll talk about this coming Shabbos, but we have bittul chametz. One of the things we do is relinquish our ownership over chametz. We do it both at night after we search and in the morning after we burn. We declare in Aramaic and in English if we don't understand Aramaic, any chametz that's in my possession, I hereby declare ownerless. I relinquish ownership. I want nothing to do. Chametz, I'm breaking up with you. You're right, it's a problem in me, not in you. I'm done, we're over. But we break up with our chametz through bittul. Additionally, we do bedikas chametz the night before Pesach, if we're home for Pesach. The night before Pesach, in our home, we do a search mission throughout our home. What we'll talk about the Shabbos is, isn't it a joke? By the time you get to Erev Pesach, you've been cleaning for, according to me, half a day, but you've been cleaning for a long time. You know your house is free of chametz. So much so that we have to put out 10 pieces of bread so that we're not saying a bracha in vain, a bracha levatala, according to some the Rambam mentions. So isn't it all a joke? I'm not really searching for chametz. It's all gone by then. So we'll talk about that on this coming Shabbos. So we relinquish our ownership of chametz. We search for chametz. And more recently, I say recently, I mean in the last number of centuries, we've introduced universally the practice of mechiras chametz, selling chametz, and it's a last kind of last buffer to protect us that if we searched and didn't find something and relinquished ownership, but maybe we didn't really mean it, we also sell our chametz to a non-Jew, in this case our custodian Theo, and everyone's welcome on Erev Pesach to come watch. We're going to advertise, if you want to come watch the way we sell, it's unusual. We do a number of different methods to actually sell the chametz. So three different things in order to get rid of in order to get rid of chametz. And why are we so eager to get rid of chametz? Because chametz is unusual. Chametz is, I would say, unique, but it's not, in that there are 8 mitzvos that apply today to Pesach. The Rambam enumerates them in his introduction to Hilchos Chametz Umatzah. There are 3 positive commandments and there are 5 negative commandments. The 3 positive commandments, number 1 is Tashbisu, Lahashbis Sa'or, to destroy any semblance of leaven. And there's a big discussion. Is this a proactive obligation or is it a results-based obligation? Meaning, if I have chametz, I have to destroy it. Or no, even if I don't have chametz, go out and get some chametz so that you can fulfill the mitzvah. Reb Chaim Brisker held, Reb Chaim, that it's only results-based. You only have to destroy chametz if you had it. But if you don't have chametz, you have no obligation to destroy it. We have the minhag, we have the 10 pieces of bread we discovered, so that we fulfill biur chametz, we burn the chametz on Erev Pesach, even if by then you've already gotten rid of all of your chametz. That's number 1. Second positive mitzvah is the obligation to eat matzah. And the 3rd positive obligation is the Saper Bitzias Mitzrayim, to tell the story, the Haggadah. We tell the story, which is different on Pesach night than the rest of the year. All year long, we have an obligation of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. We remember and we invoke the experience of the Exodus each and every day. When we say Shema, different mitzvot on Shabbos, when we recite Kiddush. But ingrained within Jewish ritual and practice is the memory of leaving Egypt. And why that is not for now. So again, there's a discussion. What's the difference between the daily obligation to remember leaving Egypt and the Pesach night obligation? And again, Reb Chaim Brisker quoted 3 fundamental differences, and Rabbi Soloveitchik, his grandson, added on a couple more, all for another time. But one of the 3rd and final positive commandment of Pesach is to tell a story. There are 5 negative prohibitions with Pesach. Number 1, you can't eat chametz from Chatzos and on. Number 2, you can't eat chametz all 7 days, or in our case, 8 days of Pesach. Number 3, you can't eat a mixture with chametz. Normally, we believe that when a prohibited food is mixed into a mixture, depending on the ratio, it can become nullified. Here, chametz is so potent, so unusual, it's forbidden even in a mixture. Number 4 and number 5 are the prohibitions we know as bal yira'ah and bal yimatzah. You're not allowed to see chametz, and you can't find chametz. Now, the prohibition of seeing chametz, both of these prohibitions, only apply to chametz that's in your possession. Every year people ask me, Rabbi, I had to go to the supermarket to pick things up on Chol HaMoed. Can I go down the bread aisle? Do I have to look the other way? So you're allowed to see chametz. You can't see chametz that you own, which is another way of saying you can't own chametz. There can't be chametz in your possession. So we have 3 positive commandments, 5 negative ones. But chametz is unique in 5 other ways. And here they are. And this is what makes chametz such an enemy. Chametz is the villain of Pesach and Erev Pesach. Number 1, we have a specific prohibition, as I just mentioned, not only against chametz proper, but against any mixture containing chametz. Number 2, we have 2 violations, 2 prohibitions against even owning chametz. Now, most prohibited foods I'm allowed to own, there are exceptions. Basar b'chol of meat and milk, I can't even own. But there are most prohibitions I can own, I just can't eat. They're prohibited to imbibe, but I'm allowed to own. Chametz is so potent, you can't even own it. Number 3, we have a positive commandment to destroy it. Number 4, it's prohibited to benefit from chametz. Again, most prohibited foods, I can't eat them. I could benefit from them. I could feed it to my dog. Basar b'chalav is another example you can't even benefit from. But chametz, you can't even derive any benefit from. You can't trade in chametz, you can't sell chametz on Pesach, you can't feed it to your pet on chametz, you can't derive any benefit. Number 5, lastly, it's also b'mashehu. It is prohibited even in the most minute amount, even in the smallest measure. Chametz is aser, chametz is prohibited to own, even in the smallest measure. We've been talking all about chametz. What is chametz? What is this villain? What is this enemy that we're trying to get rid of? So defining chametz, the Rambam defines chametz as being made from 5 types of grain. Chametz and matzah are 2 sides of the same coin. What would be chametz is eligible to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. The issue, the difference between chametz and matzah is not the ingredients. The only difference between chametz and matzah is?
Time.
The only difference, and that's very instructive about what the holiday of Pesach is all about. The only difference between chametz and matzah is not the ingredients. The ingredients are exactly the same. The only difference is time. When you're slow and lazy and procrastinate, you get chametz in your life. And when you act with enthusiasm and zeal, then you have a mitzvah of matzah. And all of Pesach is there to reinforce our appreciation of and how we use our our sense of time. Yesterday we read Parshas HaChodesh. We read about and we celebrated Rosh Chodesh. HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. The first mitzvah in the Torah that God gave us is the holiday of Rosh Chodesh, that we operate in the lunar calendar, not the solar calendar, and we control time. Unlike the solar calendar, which operates automatically, the lunar calendar, the moon, when two witnesses would testify they saw the new moon, that determined the new month. And if Beis Din, for whatever reason, wanted to manipulate the calendar, Afilu Shogin, Afilu Mezidin, even unintentionally or intentionally, they were empowered to manipulate the calendar. So who decided when Yom Kippur was? The holiest day in the year. Not God. Shabbos, God decides. It comes each and every week. Count 6 days and the seventh is Shabbos. But when Yom Kippur, the holiest day, when Pesach would fall, was based on when the Beis Din decided it was Rosh Chodesh. And Beis Din, therefore, was able to determine the calendar. This was the first mitzvah the Jewish people received on their way out of Egypt. The question was why? Why not give a holier, more noble... Why is that the first mitzvah we got? So I've repeated this often. The Sforno, Rabbi Soloveitchik expanded on the Sforno, says the very first mitzvah we got coming out of slavery was the mitzvah to control time. Because the difference between a slave and a free person is time. The slave has no control over their own time. The free person shows a mastery, a discipline. They control time. So Pesach is the holiday all about time. The difference between chametz and matzah is just a function not of ingredients. It's just a function of time. We, in going from being enslaved to becoming free, it's all about controlling our time and achieving freedom to realize who we can and should become. So chametz is made from the five grains, namely chita, ksemes, saora, shibala, shual, and shipon. Namely, wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye. Wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye. These five grains mixed with water and left for 18 or more minutes turn into chametz. Mixed with water less than 18 minutes can be baked into and you fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. Kitnios are not chametz. Kitnios are a relatively modern invention, a little over 1,000 years old. And I know there's a big discussion today. Some suggesting we nullify, abandon the custom of kitnios. We Ashkenazim don't abandon our minhag Yisrael Torahi, it's halacha. We don't abandon such a ingrained, pun intended, custom so easily. But kitnios is for one of two reasons. Kitnios means legumes and the like. And why did the prohibition of kitnios, or the custom of not consuming kitnios on Pesach, arise? Two reasons were offered by the Sefer Mitzvos Ketanos. The smack was one of the earliest, the Mordechai and others. And what were the reasons? One was that legumes can be ground into flour. And the flour can be baked into what looks like bread and manipulated into things that look like bread. And that which can be manipulated and cooked and baked into things that look like bread or flour products, we could confuse with chametz itself and come to eat chametz. So as an additional fence to ensure that we wouldn't eat chametz, we collectively practice not to eat that which can be manipulated into chametz as well. If that's the case, you should see, look what's happened today. Today you go to the store, you could have kosher for Pesach bagels, kosher for Pesach pizza, kosher for Pesach cereal, kosher for Pesach bread, kosher for Pesach everything. So the spirit of kitnios is being violated. And there's a big discussion, why didn't they prohibit potatoes? Potatoes didn't exist. Potatoes were discovered, a function of the newer world in Europe. Why didn't they prohibit potatoes? We have potato starch. Right? When I was a kid, everything on Pesach was 101 ways to make potatoes. It was just potatoes being ground and manipulated potato starch into horrible tasting cakes and horrible tasting everything, and everything made out of potato starch. So basically in the end, you just made a big potato because it was better than everything you made out of potato starch. So why didn't they make potatoes kitnios? So there's a big discussion already among the poskim. And they say because what wasn't prohibited in the original prohibition is not prohibited today. What about derivatives from kitnios? They have a whole discussion about peanut oil, Rav Moshe, the Sri Deish, and others. So kitnios is not actual chametz. And even we, who are careful with kitnios, Ashkenazim, not because we believe kitnios is chametz, but because we have the practice to avoid actually eating chametz, to avoid eating that which we were originally, the custom was formed not to eat, because it could be manipulated like chametz. The second reason was, because kitnios, legumes and the like, were stored in sacks and sold by weight. And often the traders used to put wheat kernels or flour in the sack to add to the weight. So when a person would use it, it could turn into actual chametz. So because kitnios is not chametz, we have a lot of leniencies with kitnios. You're allowed to own it, and you're allowed to benefit from it. And in certain circumstances, you're allowed to eat it. A baby who won't nurse or eat anything else, who only exclusively uses a formula that's kitnios, we would allow that baby to continue to use kitnios. Person who's sick or unable to eat other things and needs something which is kitnios, kitnios is not actual chametz. That's why we have more flexibility in our attitude towards it. Okay. So with that background, now let's talk about what we're searching for in our house. So far we've talked about the stringencies, five stringencies of chametz that make it unique. It truly is the enemy, it's a villain. It's asur b'mashu, it's forbidden with the smallest amount, it's forbidden in a mixture. You can't get hana'ah of benefit from it. You have two specific prohibitions to even own it. It's chametz is a true villain. So what are we looking for in our house? And here's the most important part of what I am going to tell you that unfortunately not enough people are saying, but if you listen to our Gedolim and our Poskim, they've been saying it for a long time. So here we go. Number one. Shulchan Aruch, Or HaChaim, Siman Tov, Nun Gimel. I'm giving you the Makoros, so you can look it up yourself in case you think that some modern rabbi is making this stuff up. This goes against everything my bubby taught me. Let me tell you what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Or HaChaim, Siman Tov, Nun Gimel. I'm sorry, Tufnun Gimel is what tells you what is chametz and what's eligible to be matzah. It's, I wanted to take you to, yeah, here. Yeah, beginning with Psachim. Let's go back to the Gemara itself. The opening Mishnah in Psachim says that on the 14th of Nisan, Orla Arbasa, Bodkinus HaChametz Lo'or Ner, Kol Makam Shein Mach Nisan Bo Chametz, Ein Tzarech Bedika. Any place where chametz is not brought does not need a bediko. V'me'a amru. What were they talking about? Shtei shuras b'marteif. Two rows of a wine cellar have to be searchable. I enjoyed this a lot because a couple weeks ago, Yecheved and I went to LA on vacation to mark a significant birthday of hers, which I will not be stupid enough to tell you the number. She just turned
30.
20? 30? 30? Anyway, so we went to, for those who've never been to Oxnard, the Herzog Winery. It's a great wine tasting and an even better restaurant. But when you go on the tour of the winery and you look into their massive room with barrels, it was reminiscent, I was telling Yocheved and our non-Jewish tour guide, about the opening Mishnah in Pesachim that tells us on Erev Pesach, when you're looking for chametz, how much do you have to look? So if you've been in this massive room, there's wine barrels, huge, stacked high, and deep, 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 deep. So the opening Mishnah and the Gemara talk about how deep do you have to go in searching for chametz and cleaning for chametz. The Mishnah talks about really it's only the front layer. And really it's only the barrels at your level. Why? Because what's the fear is that the shamash, your fear is that your waiter, the person who works in your home, is going to go into your wine cellar because they have to go uncork a barrel and retrieve some more wine for the meal. You ran out of wine. But they're munching on their sandwich while they're going to get the wine. And they put the sandwich down between the barrels so that they can hold the pitcher and fill it with wine. So where do you have to look for chametz? So the Mishnah tells us the rule. You only have to look for chametz where chametz is brought during the year. If chametz is never brought there during the year, you need not clean or look for it on Pesach, on Erev Pesach. And if you don't believe the Gemara, the Mishnah, we codify there. If you don't believe me that we believe this halacha l'maisa, the Shulchan Aruch writes it explicitly. I'm reading now from the Shulchan Aruch. Bodekom kama sheyesh lach Hashem mechnisu bo chametz. You have to check all the places where you fear that chametz entered. And therefore all the floors of the home need a search. You walk around the house and you munch on your sandwich, you're eating a snack, you're talking on the phone, you don't even realize where you are, you might have put it down. And that is the halacha. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Einam tzrichim bedika, mestama ein machnisim bem chametz, alam ken yodea sheichnis bem chametz. What's the default? Is the default that you probably brought chametz there unless you know with certainty that you didn't? Or is the default that you didn't bring chametz there unless you know that you did? So the Mishnah Berurah says the default is you didn't bring chametz there unless you know that you did. So therefore, this number one rule is already going to save you, not days, but weeks of your Pesach cleaning. And again, I say this every single year. If you know that you didn't bring chametz, if you don't know that you brought chametz there, you can assume you didn't bring chametz there and you don't need to clean it. Which means, you unlikely brought chametz to your ceiling fan. There's no real reason you should be on a ladder wiping down your ceiling fan. It's unlikely that you brought chametz anywhere that you'd be on a ladder. If you have a ladder out on Erev Pesach, you're doing spring cleaning, you're not cleaning for chametz. Don't blame God, don't blame the Torah, don't blame Halacha, don't blame the rabbis that you come exhausted to the Seder. If you have a ladder out, you're not cleaning for Pesach, you're doing spring cleaning. If you're in the scroll, in the crawl place above your garage, you're not cleaning for Pesach. You did not bring chametz, and you're not going to be going there. That's rule number one. Let's keep going, because you'll see even now how more extreme. Okay, so again, rule number one. If during the year chametz is not brought to a particular place or area, there's no need for it to be cleaned or checked for chametz. Not my rule, the opening Mishnah Pesachim, and the Shulchan Aruch. Number two, if an item is not used on Pesach, there is no need for it to be cleaned or checked, provided it will be sealed away and the chametz on it is sold. Again, rule number two. If you have no intent on accessing something on Pesach, you don't have to clean it. Just close it up, make it inaccessible to you, and sell whatever chametz is on it. I have vivid memories. I feel bad I throw my mother under the bus every year. She's a tzaddikis, that's why she went above and beyond. But I have vivid memories as a child of my mother with the toaster, with every appliance from the kitchen, and a toothpick and a toothbrush. Those are my memories. On Erev Pesach, scrubbing, cleaning, getting into the cracks and crevices. I'm talking hours, hours going through every appliance. It's totally and utterly unnecessary. It's a good thing to do once a year. Do spring cleaning in July when you have all the time in the world. It's a good thing to clean your things. It has nothing to do with Pesach. You take a box or you put it into a closet that you're going to put a piece of tape over, and that's it. Every appliance from your kitchen that you're not koshering for Pesach, you prepare for Pesach by putting in a cabinet with a piece of tape over it, and shine, you're done. No toothpick, no toothbrush, no scrubbing, no, what's that metal thing you scrub with? Brillo pad. No anything. You're done. Put it away, and you're done. That's true not only for appliances, it's true for areas. Your brake front. You're not going to go into your brake front, so here's how you clean your brake front. It's called a piece of tape. Put a piece of tape across the door, your brake front is now ready for Pesach. If you have a room, we have a toy chest where my kids, you know, there's possible Play-Doh and chametz, whatever. Throw it all in the toy chest and put a piece of tape over the toy chest. It's ready for Pesach. You're not going to sit and scrub and toothpick and toothbrush and Brillo pad and that. You're done. Hours you would spend in the playroom with your kids' stuff. Toys that are complicated, toys that you fear chametz got mixed in, throw them in a box, put a piece of tape, put it in a closet. You're done. It's not only true for appliances, not only true for toys, not only true for cabinets and space, it's true for rooms. If you have a room that is particularly difficult to clean, or you know over Pesach you're not going to go in there, put a piece of tape across the door, and it's now ready for Pesach. So the easiest way to minimize your Pesach preparation is to identify that which you will not need or access over Pesach, set it aside, put a piece of tape over it, remind yourself not to go into it, and you're done. So when you go through your kitchen, again, I have vivid memories of emptying every cabinet in the kitchen and cleaning every dish and cleaning every piece of silverware and cleaning everything, and that's spring cleaning and it's lovely. But it's not necessary for Pesach. And I would argue, do not do it before Pesach. You have enough to do. Don't destroy your Pesach. So how do you prepare the kitchen? You identify which cabinets you'll need that you're emptying out to put in your Pesach things, which are only a fraction of your kitchen. You don't do that for your whole kitchen. And everything else, you put a piece of tape over. Chevin and I walk around our kitchen when it's time to kasher, put a piece of tape over 80%, 90%, whatever the number is in your kitchen, 75%. And so rather than have to clean 100% and break your back, you're putting a piece of tape over 80% and you're already almost done with getting your kitchen ready. You have a pantry and half of it you're using, half of it you're not. Take garbage bags or plastic tablecloths and tape them over the shelves that you're not going to need or use. You don't have to empty and wipe down and everything that is going on. You have a spare fridge, and you're going to need to keep one shelf of chametz, you know, condiments that you included in your chametz sale that you don't want to throw out. Put it on the shelf, cover it with a plastic tablecloth or whatever you could tape it up with, and you're done. That was rule number two. Rule number three. I'm going to make your life even easier. This is the Shulchan Aruch Siman Tov Mem Beis Sif Beis. Hapas atzma sheipsha v'nifsalam le'echol akelev melugman shenisracha eina chayev levoer. Rule number three: crumbs that are inedible even by a dog are not considered chametz, even if they are bigger than a kezias. Crumbs that are inedible to a dog, even if they're bigger than a kezias, which is about 30 grams, are not considered chametz. Crumbs inedible by a dog, even if they're bigger than a kezias, are not chametz. And rule number four, the last rule, there's no need to check for crumbs that are less than a kezias if they're dirty or soiled and wouldn't be edible by a human. If they're dirty and soiled and a human wouldn't eat them, and they're less than a kezias, you don't even need to check for them. Comes from the Mishnah Berurah, Tav Mem Beis, Sifkat and Lamed Gimel. I won't read it out loud, you could look there. So in other words, we're searching only and cleaning only for three things. Chametz that will be exposed on Pesach, which is less than a kezias and edible by a human, or bigger than a kezias and edible by a dog. So, if you're moving your refrigerator out, or you're pulling your oven out, you're doing spring cleaning, you're not cleaning for Pesach. Because whatever chametz is under there or behind there, A, you're not going there on Pesach to eat. B, it's so disgusting, it's likely less than a kezias, it's not edible to a human, and if it's bigger than a kezias, it's not edible to a dog. So if you're pulling out a major appliance, you're not cleaning for Pesach. If you're on a ladder, you're not cleaning for Pesach. If you're in a crawl space or wiping down a windowsill, a high windowsill, you're not cleaning for Pesach. If you've got a toothpick or a toothbrush out, you're not cleaning for Pesach. And if you're on hands and knees with a toothbrush going through the grout between your tile, you're not cleaning for Pesach. You're doing spring cleaning. Because whatever is caught in that grout is less than a kezias and inedible to a human. It's not chametz and you don't have to destroy it. So much of what we are accustomed to do for Pesach is spring cleaning, and it's great. Do it. It's beautiful. Your house will be sterile. You could do medical surgery in your house after you're done. It's a wonderful thing. But it's not Pesach. And it's an absolute tragedy what's happened. Because in the process of trying to be righteous and virtuous and going to extremes to prepare for Pesach, to do spring cleaning, to confuse spring cleaning and Pesach, what's happened in the process? In the process, we've sacrificed our Simchas Yontif. We've sacrificed the joy and the excitement and the happiness of getting ready for Pesach. We've absolutely forfeited what Pesach is really supposed to be all about. There's an obligation, there's a chiyuv of Simcha. I'm looking for where it is. Here it is. It's in the Shulchan Aruch Simen Tav Kuf Chaf Tes. Chayev Adam Leo Sameach V'Tov Lev B'Moed Hu V'Ishto U'Banav. There is an obligation of a mitzvah, of simcha. There is a positive commandment to have joy over the holiday. V'Samachta B'Chagecha. There's an absolute obligation, which the Gemara delineates as different for who you are. For men, it's defined by Basar V'Yayin. Men get simcha by a good piece of meat and some wine. And women, a husband's obligated to buy his wife on Erev Yontif some new clothing or jewelry. And children, you got to buy them special toys or candy. The Gemara delineates for everyone, simcha is defined differently, but what we all have in common is an obligation of simcha. The Mishnah Berurah writes, "Hu mitzvah saseh min haTorah." This is a positive biblical commandment. "Tachsiv samachta b'chagecha v'noheges gam b'noshim," and it applies to every gender. It applies equally to all. So if you come to the Seder and you're a shmata, you're wiped out, you're exhausted, you're spent, you're tired, and you're busy feeling resentful, and you're bitter instead of the maror, then you've sacrificed and compromised the whole v'samachta v'chagecha, this positive commandment, all in the name of doing spring cleaning. It's not righteous. It's a chumash shasil dekula. It's a stringency which leads to a leniency. You think you're being righteous by doing spring cleaning instead of just getting ready for Pesach, but it's at the expense of Pesach. And not only is it at the expense of Pesach, I believe that we're struggling so hard, even though it's easier than ever to be a Jew. It's easier than ever, right? The technology and the kosher food and the ability to be a Jew, observant Jew today, is easier than ever. And yet our children and grandchildren are walking away. They're struggling to feel inspired. And why? If it's easier than ever. If our babbies and zaydis were willing to sacrifice and compromise and give up their lives to clean for Pesach, literally, to experience Pesach, the stories of Pesach and Auschwitz and so on, our children who have it so easy, why are they uninspired? And the answer is because they see us uninspired. They're being brought up in an environment that you're krechts and moans and oi and miserable and terrible and resentful and tired and bitter. It's bitterness. It shouldn't be bitterness. Simcha. You love Pesach. You know, if you clean with your children for Pesach, you know, I feel a little bit nebuch for the people who go away for Pesach. Because they'll get the best meats. They'll get the midnight barbecue and the quinoa sushi station. But their children won't know the experience of the sights and the sounds and the smells and the flavors of getting ready. What it means to use that chopping thing in a wooden bowl and make charosas. What it means to grind the maror. What it means to set the table with the seder plate. what it means to have your room look ready for Pesach, what it means to smell your mother's matzah balls, to make the matzah balls, assuming you eat gebrachts, what it means to, that's something you can't learn in school. You can't learn that in school. And that's our obligation. You know, the Torah Simecha is the responsibility to give our children the flavor, the love, the feeling, the warmth. That can't be manufactured or reproduced. And so, you know, with toothpicks and toothbrushes and on ladders and our hands and knees takes away the joy that should be in the home in the days and weeks leading up to Pesach. There should be music blasting, and we should be cleaning, and we should be excited. We're going free, it's amazing. We should be making our puppets for the Makos, and we should be talking about the questions we're going to discuss at the Seder. There should be a joy in the air. And we can't undermine that by doing things which are not even part of the halachic system. And we've absolutely created an Avodah Zarah, we're worshipping some other god, when we replace halacha with some system of spring cleaning, which is not what the halacha is all about. Okay, so that's my annual diatribe. I got that on my system, I feel a lot better. So now we can go through the house. With that in mind, what? The girls were just found? Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Okay, good. They're all right? Okay, Baruch Hashem. Chastay Hashem, so happy to hear that. Okay, so with that in mind, now let's go through the house. When you go through your house, any area where chametz was not brought need not be checked. So do you need to go through, empty every drawer and wipe it down of every dresser in your house? Do you need to go through the pockets of every article of clothing in your closet of every in your house? Now here's the important caveat. This is the important caveat. Well, I have to walk back a little bit. Because the Mishnah Berurah says, if you have young children in your house, so all the rules are off. Because now every place is eligible for chametz having been brought there. If you have young children, now chametz is like got a mind of its own. It can be brought anywhere. But even with that said, how long does it take to go through a room? You open the dressers, you move the clothing, you look, you see. If you're taking down and wiping and pulling the dresser away from the wall and wiping down the ceiling fan and shampooing the carpet of the room, that's spring cleaning. Getting that room ready for chametz, ready for Pesach, each room is 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes. How long does it take to go through the room to confirm that there's no chametz there?
Why can't we use the rule that you stated earlier? I don't think that he did unless I know he did.
You can, but I'm saying if you have young children.
I'm talking about young children.
So even if you have young children, then that's the equivalent of knowing that chametz likely traveled around your house. Because young children are, you know, that's different. So if you have no young children, mamash should take 20 minutes to get ready for Pesach. Not 20 minutes, but it's mamash, you know, if you don't know, if you know that you didn't bring chametz into these bedrooms and into the guest room and into the study and into the whatever. And if you did bring it and you know you had it on the desk, you don't have to empty the file cabinet and go through each of the files and empty the svarim from the shelf because you know you didn't put the sandwich on the shelf. So again, we've minimized the time to a fraction of what you thought it should be just with our rules. So cleaning the house for Pesach is half a day. A day? A day? I mean, I don't know what mansion you live in, but a day to walk room to room and to confirm that you go through the drawers, you look a little bit through the closet, you know, you even want to look through behind the bed, but you're not moving major appliances, you're never on a ladder, and you don't have to be on your hands and knees. Okay, so let's get to the kitchen. Before we get to the kitchen, any questions about cleaning the rest of the house and how we've gotten it down to half a day? No. You're all chassidim. You're on board. You're convinced. Great. Let's go to the kitchen. I'm going to walk you through the whole kitchen. Hold the questions unless it's about the appliance we're talking about. Otherwise, ask me afterwards. Let's start with countertops. Well, let me give you the background. Might as well teach some Torah here. The halacha is that food is forbidden not only be'en, not only mamish. When we have prohibited food, you're not only allowed to eat the actual food item, but we have a concept that's called ta'am ki'ikr. Ta'am ki'ikr means ta'am means taste. Ki'ikr means is as if it's actually there. So why is it that you have to have kosher pots? Why not just cook in a pot and clean it? And when your pot's clean, it should go back to neutral, and now you can cook whatever you want in it. Take a treif pot and cook kosher once it's clean. Take a meat pot and cook dairy once it's clean. Why do we have to have designated pots as kosher or as meat and dairy? Because of this principle, ta'am ki'ikr. Ta'am ki'ikr means taste is like actual food. So once the walls of the pot have absorbed a particular taste, the walls of the pot have the status, the pot has the status of that taste. And you need to purge that taste from the walls. Gemara has a big discussion. How do you know the principle of Tam Ki'ikar? Goes through a lot of different possibilities. It's Tam Ki'ikar Daraisa, Darabanan. Let's leave out the lumdus of the whole sugya. But Tam Ki'ikar, which means, again, that taste is as significant as the actual food. So even though my pot is sparkling clean right now, there's no actual food residue there, but the taste that was absorbed into the walls of the pot have the same potency and prohibition as the actual food item itself. Okay? So to kosher my pot, I got to get the taste out of the walls of the pot. How do I get the taste out of the walls of the pot? So the principle in halacha is kibolo kach polto. Kibolo, bolo, blia means absorb. The way the taste was absorbed, kach polto, is the way that it is purged. The same means, the same medium, the same mechanism through which it was absorbed is how it's purged. What does it mean, the same way it was absorbed? How is taste absorbed into a pot? So taste is absorbed to a pot through a number of methods. Number one is heat. You need the presence of heat in order to move a taste from one to the other. You also need a liquid, you need a food. If I have a kosher pot that's hot and touches a non-kosher pot that's hot, no taste gets transferred. Even though there's heat, you have no food to transfer the taste. Which is why on an airplane, your food comes double wrapped. How does it help to be double wrapped? Because the outer wrapping may have been in the same oven with the tray food being heated at the same time. So the outer wrapping became non-kosher. But the second, the inner wrapping, the taste can't transfer from the outer wrapping to the inner wrapping, because even though you have heat, but you need food in order to create a transfer of taste. So you need heat and food for a transfer of taste. Another way that taste gets transferred is through pickling. If you have, think about it. You know, you take fish, you put it in brine, it cooks it. If you put in some pickling recipe or brine, you can cook the equivalent of cooking an item. So that also transfers taste. A third way is, if a non-kosher food or liquid sits in a pot for more than 24 hours, it absorbs time. There makes it absorb taste as well. Those are the ways that food is absorbed. Even within the heat method, there are multiple ways that food, that taste is absorbed. It's absorbed through liquid. So if I have a corned beef boiling in water in my pot, even if the corned beef happened to float in the water and never touch the walls of the pot, through the water, it touches the pot. That's through liquid. Then I also have a way where taste transfers through heat itself, which is through roasting. So kibolo kach polto, the way it's absorbed is the way it's purged. When liquid was the way that the food, that the taste was absorbed, then I use liquid to get the taste out. When heat was the way that the taste was absorbed, I use heat to get the taste out. When steam was the way the taste was absorbed, I use steam to get the taste out. So underlying all the rules of kashering is the principle of kibolo kach polto. The way it's absorbed is the way that it's purged. Here's another rule. The halacha is that after 24 hours, for most tastes, the taste becomes rotten, it becomes spoiled, it becomes tam pugum. It's a rotten taste. And it's no longer viable, it's no longer an actual taste, it's no longer considered a food. So, after 24 hours, the taste is no longer good. An actual food after 24 hours is still not kosher. Right? So if I have a piece of bacon and I left it out for 24 hours, it's still a piece of bacon 24 hours later. But I'm talking about the taste of bacon was absorbed into my pot, and my pot is now clean. The taste can only last for 24 hours. After 24 hours in my clean pot, the taste is pogum, the taste is no longer viable. So you'll say, why don't I just take my meat pot, wait 24 hours, now I could cook dairy? And in fact, one of the Rishonim did exactly that, relying on the principle of Eino Ben Yomo. A Ben Yomo means within 24 hours. Eino Ben Yomo means outside of 24 hours. But we have a stringency that we treat an Eino Ben Yomo like a Ben Yomo, Atu Ben Yomo. If we started playing that game, you're definitely going to get confused. You're going to think that you didn't use that pot in 24 hours. So even though it was used for meat, now it's clean, the taste is now not potent, now I could cook dairy, but you're going to mess up, it was really 23 hours and 58 minutes. Or your moron husband used the pot and didn't tell you, and now the clock restarted, and now you're going to have a problem of basar v'chalav. So, atu ben yomo, because you may come to make a mistake, we have separate dishes. meat and dairy, kosher and non-kosher. We don't rely on this principle of that after 24 hours, the taste is no longer potent. But we do rely on it in the world of kashering. That when we're kashering, the first stage of helping ourselves is waiting 24 hours. By waiting 24 hours, the utensil really technically is already kosher on a biblical level, because whatever taste was absorbed in its wall is no longer viable. So now when I take the additional step of koshering, also, now I've really koshered it. But on a biblical level, it was already technically kosher at that point. Which is why when you call me, and someone says, you know, the lid was put on the pot, the fork was put into the hot thing, the spoon was found in the dishwasher, what's the first question the rabbi will always ask? Is, was it used within 24 hours? Was it used within 24 hours? Because you need to determine, ben yomo, eino ben yomo, you know what you're dealing with here. Is this biblical, rabbinic? What is the potency of the taste? Okay, with all that halachic background in mind, let's go on a quick tour of the kitchen. Quick tour of the kitchen. And I see actually the OU Pesach guide this year has a great visual for this. Yes. Yeah. Right.
Fork is used in a burnt thing, in the wrong thing. By just cleaning it off and letting it lay for 24 hours, you can consider that.
No. No, I'm glad you asked. I want to clarify. No, you have to kosher it. Why? Biblically, technically, it would be, but we kosher it because we go the other extra mile. But let me even give an example of what I mean. Let's say, again, your moron husband took out the meat pot and made something dairy in it for dinner for the kids, thinking he was doing a nice thing. And now you have this dairy food. You call me, you say, do you have to throw it out? We have no dinner if we have to throw it out. So the answer is, well, the meat pot, was it used within 24 hours? If it was not used within 24 hours, it needs to be koshered now, because it previously had meat, now it's absorbed milk. It needs to be koshered, but whatever milk casserole he made in it is kosher. It's kosher. Because it hadn't been used in 24 hours, we do not lechatchila use a pot like that. But if a person made a mistake and did it that way, it wouldn't make it treif, because the taste that had previously been absorbed is now stale, it's tam pogum, it's no longer viable. So fam, I'm glad you asked, because we can clarify. Of course you still have to kosher even after the 24 hours. But my point is, we wait 24 hours before koshering to give ourselves an additional layer of benefit. Okay, if you look in the OU book on page 26, 27, they have a cute little picture of the kitchen to walk you through the koshering. No, it can't be koshered. Earthenware, ceramic cannot be koshered. And why can it not be koshered? Because it absorbs, but it doesn't purge. A feature of earthenware is that it absorbs taste, but it doesn't purge taste. Glass, we Ashkenazim believe that glass absorbs taste, but doesn't purge taste. And therefore glass cannot be koshered for Pesach, which we'll get to in a moment. Sfaradim believe that glass is not porous, and it doesn't absorb or purge. And therefore, Sfaradim will use the same Pyrex dish to cook meat and dairy. They'll use this. They'll use a non-kosher Pyrex dish and then cook a kosher thing in it. Which sounds crazy, right? Our bubbies would throw us out of town for doing something crazy like that. But Sfaradim, you see that it's all a function of the porousness. It's all a function of its capacity to absorb and to purge, because that's the method of how taste gets transferred and how we kosher. So if you look on page 26, 27, I'm not telling you we follow all of these examples, but it's a good picture guide to getting around the kitchen. Let's start with the microwave. How do you kosher a microwave? So I just said you can't kosher glass, so the glass tray has to be taken out. The microwave has to be cleaned thoroughly and extensively, including, often there's like a metal screen. You have to clean it very carefully and make sure that nothing is trapped there. You leave the microwave for 24 hours and now you understand why. And then you take something which is microwave safe, a styrofoam cup or bowl or microwave safe utensil, and you put it in the microwave for the length of time it takes to fill the chamber with steam. 10 minutes. And then you move that utensil, fill it with water, and do it again to kosher the spot where the utensil was the first time. That's how you kosher a microwave. And now you understand why. The way the walls of the microwave absorb taste was through steam, so the way you purge it with taste is through steam. You have to take the glass out because we said glass can't be kashered for Ashkenazim. You wait 24 hours for the reason we told you. You boil the water once to kasher the microwave and a second time to kasher the place where the utensil previously was. Questions about kashering a microwave? Great. Good. So a question in general with kashering is, what do you kasher in? Forget the microwave for a moment. Let's say you want to kasher your silverware or your becher, your kiddush cup. What pot do you use to kasher in? So you could either use a Pesach pot, or you can use a designated kashering pot, or you could even use a chametz pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours. And you understand why. By not having been used in 24 hours, it resets, and now you could use it to kasher. Correct. 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 Right.
Glass drain.
You got to take it out.
That's not to be used on Pesach.
You can't use it on Pesach. Glass tray has to be taken out. Cannot be used on Pesach. Refrigerator. We're going from easiest to hardest here. Yes. Oh, you see, that's why I was shocked. I kept saying any questions. I was waiting for someone to ask. The microwave is a convection. So ask me that again after we talk about the ovens. Refrigerator. Refrigerator has to be cleaned carefully and well. If you have a freezer which has frosted, let it defrost. Careful of the accordion rubber on the door that allows it to seal. Clean that carefully. I'll give you a little hint also, is that when you can't get into a crack or crevice, if you spray it with something which is... I don't want to say poisonous, because I don't want to suggest we should be bringing poisonous things into our kitchen, but inedible, borderline poisonous. So you're nifso me'achila. Remember the rule we said, that if it's less than a kezias, inedible to a human, it's not chametz. So by spraying in hard-to-reach places with a caustic spray, which is inedible and which is borderline bad for you, so you've now made it not chametz. So clean the accordion rubber around the door as well as you can. Clean the refrigerator, and the Jewish custom is to line the shelves. Again, everything in the refrigerator is cold. It's hard to imagine a way that taste could get transferred or how you could run into a problem. But Minhag Yisrael, the Jewish custom is to line the shelves of the refrigerator anyway. But I warn you, place a holes in whatever you're lining to allow the air circulation, otherwise your refrigerator will break. And because it's just a custom and a stringency, don't go crazy. You don't have to spend 8 hours making sure that you've covered the last square centimeter in the back corner of the shelf. Cover. It's a symbolic. It's an, you know, put some paper towels down. Cover it. But whatever you do, do it in a way that the air can continue to circulate. That's refrigerator freezers. Yes? Sure. Yeah. No, because you still don't know when you hit that threshold of Yatsu Ledisbo and how high that temperature was. I would still take the glass out. Okay, next, let's talk about countertops. Kashering countertops. So, sure. Fine. There's no chametz in the... Yeah, there's no chametz. Again, we have a stringency. This is a little spring cleaning mixed in that we defrost the freezer, we empty the fridge, and we clean. We do as best as we can. Because where there's actual food items, we're a little bit more stricter. More strict. So yeah, you can use the ice. I don't think there's a function of ice. Yeah, you can use the ice machine on Pesach. It should be cleaned, but you can use the ice machine on Pesach. Countertops. The Rama says countertops can be kashered. Some are strict to cover them nonetheless. Some are super strict to kasher and cover. The CRC and the OU and the Star K and our minhag is that you can just kasher, but you have to kasher well. How do you kasher? You clean down the countertops everywhere. You leave for 24 hours. Nothing hot can touch the counter for 24 hours. And it's kasher through the method of Irui Kli Rishon. How is it that your counter was exposed to taste? Through a liquid that spilled onto the counter. So how is it that you get the taste out? Through spilling a hot liquid onto the counter, namely boiling water. So you bring water to a rolling boil, what we call in halacha mala ababuos, till the water is rolling boil, and then you take the utensil. You can't splash it, you don't throw it so that you're on one side of the kitchen and the water runs along, because after it gets past the first foot, the water is cold by the time it gets to the rest of the counter. You have to walk the water as you're kashering the length of the counter. It's very dangerous. I'm usually the one who gets that assignment. Make sure you're wearing closed shoes and clothing over your whole skin. Make sure you have thick rubber gloves that go up the length of your arm. Even if you might want to wear goggles, sometimes there's splashes. You have to be very, very careful with this methodology. In fact, both because of its complications, and we got a new kitchen a bunch of years ago, and my wife wouldn't let me splash water all over the counters, we now cover our counters. It's easier to cover them than it is to get into this business, which is complicated. But if you want to do it, you boil the water. It's going to take a few pots, mala ababuos. You walk the length of the counter so that you're pouring the boiling water directly on each spot of the counter to the best of your ability. What types of counters can be kashered? Not all substances, materials of counters can be kashered. In the CRC guide, let me take a moment to give a plug to these different guides. Pesach is like a gazillion times easier today than it ever was. Wait 24 hours and then kasher, correct. Wait 24 hours with nothing hot. Correct. CRC is my favorite guide. I happen to be a big fan of CRC throughout the year. CRC is the Chicago Rabbinical Council, based in Chicago. I always find throughout the year, their policies, their information, the clarity, the reasonable approach, I tremendously value the CRC. If you have any smartphone, you could download the CRC app, and it is the best app available in this area. It has throughout the year, from Slurpee lists when you're in 7-Eleven, which Slurpee flavors are kosher, to the liquor lists, to soda beverage lists, to cleaning vegetables, to, you know, does frozen cauliflower need a hechsher? Every list and every question, if you have your CRC app, to which hechsherim are good. It has a list of which symbols are good. If you have that app on your phone, 99% of your questions you got right there. It's the greatest app. Pesach, they have a whole extra section in the app and online, crcweb.org, their Pesach guide. And the Pesach guide has a shopping list, and the Pesach guide has all kinds of checklists. It's fantastic. It's phenomenal. But not only that, when you contact the CRC, they're great at getting back to you, and I trust them wholeheartedly. I find the greatest way to contact the CRC is on Twitter. If you tweet the CRC, they tweet you back. Even faster than if you call. I find it, by the way, this is a din, not only with Twitter, it's true with airlines. You could be on the phone forever with JetBlue. If you had a question, you tweet them, you message them on Twitter, they'll write you back almost right away. Because they have designated social media people, that's their job, and I'm now letting the secret out, but many fewer people know about contacting on social media than they do on the phone line, so you have a much better chance of being answered quicker on social media. So the CRC has a guide. It's worth downloading and printing, or you could just have your iPhone app. But in the CRC guide, they have checklists and shopping lists. They have an entire spreadsheet on countertops. Which countertops can be kashered, which not, and how. So, it's on page 21 of their guide. Acrylic, Avonite, Blue Louise, Buddy Rhodes, Butcher Block, Caesar Stone, Cambria Cement. I never heard of any of these things, but they have the whole thing. We Paskin, we the CRC, the OU Paskin, you can kasher formica. If you want to pour boiling water on formica, formica can be kashered. Unless it's very old formica that has a lot of cuts and cracks and crevices, then it should be covered. But if formica is rather smooth and new, then it can be kashered. Zinc, zodiac, wood, swanstone, sorrel, starin, stainless steel. So depending on the most popular forms of countertops, which are formica, granite, quartz, Corian, these can all be kosher. These can all be kosher in the method I just told you, boiling the water. Otherwise, you can cover. A very easy way to cover today, which can be a permanent way of covering. The first year it takes a little more work. This is what we did. You go to Home Depot or Lowe's, and you get floor laminate that comes in rolls. You know, like you used to, like the floor of your basement back when you lived up north, or of your garage. You know, the laminate, it's in a pattern that makes it look like tiles. It comes in a roll. You get that, You cut it to fit the different parts of your counter, and it's great. Your counter's covered, it lasts, it's durable, you could put hot things down on it, and once you've cut it that first year, you mark it so you remember which counter it goes on, you put it out in the future every year on Pesach, it's not a hard thing to do. Okay, that's countertops. Questions about countertops? Yes. No, if you're just covering, you don't. Some are strict to kosher, then cover, but it's not necessary. Yes? The steamer is complicated because you can only kosher with steam when the steam comes out that it's actual liquid. It has to be a thick steam, which is actually a liquid, and it has to come out at an extremely high temperature. So it has to be an industrial steamer. The steamer you buy at Bed Bath & Beyond to make your clothing not wrinkled, you know, yeah, I remember Rabbi Flug, leave it to Rabbi Flug, had a, you know, like one of those guns that measures temperature with the steamer, and he was measuring the steam when it came out and how thick it is, and you'd have to run it. You can't just kind of point it. You'd have to run it along the surface of your counter, and it would have to leave a liquid, and the liquid, when it hit the counter, would have to be hot enough to be kashering Iroi Kli Rishon. So I've said for a few years, somebody needs to invent. You know, you have the Shabbos Klal, Shabbos Zeh, Shabbos this, Shabbos that. Someone should invent a steamer for kashering that meets all the criteria and would be a much cleaner and safer method for kashering. It'd be a great contribution if somebody would invent that, but as of yet, it doesn't exist, and I think it's complicated to know that you've hit all the criteria to do it right. Okay, we did microwave, refrigerator, countertops. Let's talk about the oven. Yes, Nachum. So again, it has to be thick enough that the taste is not really going to the counter. That's why I like the laminated, what did I call it? The
linoleum.
The linoleum. Linoleum floor. That was it. Thank you. For the countertop, you can, technically, the reason we said, remember, that if you have a utensil, your countertop's one utensil, and the aluminum floor is a second utensil, but it rips so easily, and it's for a technical reason, I'm not recommending it. You know, if you had an extra thick tinfoil and you put a couple layers of it, in theory you can. Like, we use tinfoil on the stove, and we're trusting it as a cover. So, in theory you can, you just have to make sure technically it's really working. The oven. Oh, the backsplash. Yeah. It's best to try to cover the backsplash as well. You get spills and splatters along the backsplash. You can pour boiling water. If you're koshering the counter, you can kosher the backsplash as well. If you're covering, try to cover at least the area that a pot would press up against if it touched the wall of the backsplash. Yeah, you do the best you can. Yeah. You do the best you can. The oven. So the oven needs to, it depends if you have an oven. If you have a self-clean oven, yashar koach, you're very lucky. If you have a self-clean oven, then you do not need to wait 24 hours because the oven gets to a temperature over 800 degrees in self-clean, which qualifies for what we call libun gomer, or libun chamor, which is the highest level of koshering in intense, intense heat. It's so intense, if you put a wood spoon in your oven and ran the self-clean cycle, you'd have a pile of ash on the bottom when it was over. It would just burn the whole wooden spoon. That's how intense the heat in a self-clean cycle. So you clean the oven, and you run a self-clean cycle, and your oven is kosher for Pesach. Wipe it down afterwards, both for safety, you're removing all of that ash, and for Pesach. Yes? Yeah, I never heard of that, but that sounds like it would not. CRC's aqualift does not qualify. Good. Okay, good. So there you go. So a steam clean, self-clean, is not a halachic self-clean. So you'd have to treat it like an oven without a self-clean. How do you kosher an oven without a self-clean? And Lynette, this is how you kosher a convection microwave, which is really an oven and a microwave, is you clean it well, you leave it for 24 hours, and then you leave it on the highest setting for an hour. Clean it well. This is also how you kosher from meat to dairy. Clean it well, leave for 24 hours, and leave it on the highest setting for an hour. When you clean it well, this oven, again, you have to have the rubber accordion on the door, and you have the area of the window, the glass on the door. You have to be very careful in all of these different areas on the door. the wall, the floor, the doors, the racks. You should wipe it with a caustic cleaner, like Easy Off. Again, your Nifsel, your Posel, whatever might be there. Leave it for 24, clean it well, leave it for 24 hours, and kosher it. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it smells terrible. The house smells terrible. Yeah? Our minhag in our home is that the self-clean is what you put on right before everyone goes to sleep. And you wake up in the morning to a clean oven, you didn't have to deal with the smell.
I mean the first time.
The first time you're saying it's particularly bad. Okay, so that's a self-clean oven, steam-clean self-clean oven, and a regular oven. Questions about the oven? What about a warming drawer? Can a warming drawer be kashered? So the racks. Self-clean, it's no problem with the racks in there. It kashers automatically the racks. In the right. Some say to take it out. I understand. All right. I have an old model that you could leave it in. Some say to take it out. So there are those who will then, if you leave the oven on high for an hour with the rack, it kashers the rack. There are those who believe it should be covered anyway. So for Pesach, they cover the rack with tinfoil. We leave our racks. What about the warming drawer? So the warming drawer, the OU says it can't be kashered, but the CRC says it can be kashered with a sterno. The problem with the warming drawer is that you can't get it up to the level of libun kal. Even the lesser level of kashering temperature of, let's say, a regular oven, not a self-clean, the warming drawer doesn't get up to that level. So how do you create that? And here I caution you, only do it if you're careful and know what you're doing. You know a sterno that the caterer uses with the chafing dish? You put a sterno in your warming drawer, you leave the warming drawer open a little bit, so the air is getting out, you know, otherwise you'll explode your warming drawer. But the sterno will build the heat up in the warming drawer enough to kasher it. So you let a sterno burn out in your warming drawer, you leave the warming drawer open a little bit so the air can get out, and that's how the CRC recommends kashering the warming drawer. Let's go on top of the oven.
Off.
The sterno.
The sterno itself
I believe, yeah. Is it that the sterno gets the temperature up? Hold on, let me double check. Hold on, we're looking up the warming drawer. This might be easier to look up on the... got it. Oven, self-clean, Aqualift steam clean and not qualify as koshering. I don't see... I'll confirm it. I think so, yeah. Okay, let's keep going on top of the stove now. So if you have a electric stovetop, you leave the coils on high until they are glowing, until they're burnt, and then you cover the rest of the surface area with tinfoil. If you have an electric stovetop, leave each of the coils on until they burn, until they glow, and then you cover the rest of the stovetop. Don't leave them all on at the same time. Do them one at a time or two at a time at most, but you leave them on until they glow red and you cover the rest. That is an electric stovetop. So you see, until they reach the level of glowing red. Yeah, that's kosher. Yep. If you have a gas stovetop, then you clean well. You don't the electric also. You clean well. You don't use for 24 hours, and then you leave the grates on. There's two ways. If you could put the grates in your oven for an hour at 550, you could do that. It will kosher the grates. Or Reb Moshe has a tshuva where he holds they kasher automatically with the fire. You leave each of the burners on highest setting for an hour and to kasher the grate, and you cover everything else with tinfoil. That's for a gas stovetop.
So the electric stovetop, after all the four burners have burned,
cover everything else.
Right. Also, the
in between has to be covered. No, not the glass.
Oh, so what happens to the glass?
We'll get to the glass top. I'm talking about a old where you had the coil, the old electric cooktop, and now I told you I'm going from easiest to hardest. And then we talked about the gas, and now we'll get to the glass cooktop. Glass cooktop was invented a number of years ago, and it was great. Everybody was debating how to do it, and nobody exactly knew how, and every year they come out with different suggestions. But this is the psak that I give. It's based on a conversation with Rabbi Sabalovsky from years ago when they first came out, which has to do with the whole machlokas rishonim about whether we kasher glass, don't kasher glass. And here is the suggestion we follow. You won't find it in any of the booklets, but it's reliable, not because of me, because of Rabbi Sabalovsky. Here's what we recommend. Clean the glass top well. Do not use it for 24 hours. Leave each of the burners on high until they glow. Again, one or two at a time, no more. And after they cool, pour boiling water over the surface of the whole glass. Now, the most important thing is, on Pesach itself, do not put anything down in the areas between the burners. Don't put a spoon or a lid in the glass in between the burners. All of this has to do, again, with the fact that we really paskin, you can't kosher glass. Sephardim don't have this problem, Ashkenazim do. We paskin, you can't really kosher glass. So therefore, the cooktop itself, you can. The intense heat there will allow it. But the areas between the burners, I say, pour boiling water over it because it does accomplish something, according to many, in case you did end up putting something down. But try to be careful not to put anything down in the areas in between the burners. Yes? What? Yeah, you can. You can put a trivet in between the areas. I don't want to be responsible for breaking your glass top, and I don't know how close the trivet is to the heat because it's all so smooth, you know, and then the corner of the trivet got hot, you cracked the stove. So I don't suggest the trivet thing because I don't want to be responsible for breaking your glass top. But if you want to, I think the Star Case, CRC, somebody suggests that. But I say just be careful not to put anything down in between the areas of the burners themselves.
And the hot water that you pour onto the stove top of the glass?
Yeah.
Is it
pour it over the boil, over the glass. Anything that wasn't 24 hours, you can use. Okay. Stovetop? Yeah, tin foil everywhere. The catch tray underneath, if you have a coil electric or a gas electric, and otherwise everything in between. Okay. What have we not covered yet? Dishwasher. That's okay. Stovetop? Yes. The Shabbos plata. Hold on, let me. Yeah, the Shabbos plata. Shabbos plata. It's an appliance. The Shabbos plata can be kashered. You clean it well, don't use it for 24 hours, and then cover it with tinfoil. Sorry, clean it well, don't use it for 24 hours. Plug it in on its highest setting, which it only has one setting, those really hot platas, and leave it. Kashers it, and then cover it with tinfoil. For Pesach, yeah. 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 A blech on a stove cannot be kashered. If you have a metal sheet that you use as a blech on the stove, cannot. But let's finish with the kitchen. Yeah.
If you have a glass top
that you
cleaned,
yeah,
and you waited 24 hours and then you burned the different burners, right?
Yeah.
And how do you boil water on the stove top and then pour it when it's boiling, because the burner that you're boiling on is
right.
Hot.
So you could have a separate, like, electric kettle that you plug in that can get it, or you can.
Because then it's secondary.
You can rotate, right? So you right. No, you can do it even after you kashered it. It's fine as long as the pot wasn't used for 24 hours.
No, but the burner. The burner is hot.
Right. No, you have to wait till it cools before you pour.
Right.
So you do the best that you can. I don't have the urn on here. Okay, next is the dishwasher. Stainless steel dishwashers technically can be koshered. Even plastic dishwashers, we paskin plastic, can be koshered. I don't recommend the kosher either, because halachically it's very complicated koshering a dishwasher. There's the tubing, there's the catch tray, some of them have the garbage disposals on the bottom, there's the filter. It's very difficult. Koshering when you rent a home or move into a new home from non-kosher to kosher is easier. For Pesach, I, based on the advice of the agencies, do not recommend in koshering a dishwasher. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news. Sinks. You kosher a sink the same way you kosher the countertop. You clean it 24 hours, you don't use it, and Then you pour boiling water along the surface of the entire sink and the faucet. Turn the faucet upside down so you get underneath the faucet as well. If you have a metal in the sink, in the drain, they say that you should replace it. I'm not sure why. I don't know why you can't kosher it in the same method or with hagala. But we paskin you could kosher plastic. I think it would need actual hagala. You'd need to dip it, not just pour on it. But or you just take it out for Pesach, for those days of Pesach. The sink, it depends on the material. That's true for stainless steel. And what I just described is true for materials that can be koshered. But materials that cannot be koshered, you need a sink insert. A plastic basin with a hole in the bottom is your insert in your sink. If you ever redo your kitchen, do it with a sink that you can kosher for Pesach. You buy a plastic basin, you have to make a hole in it.
Question.
Yes. No, you don't have to cut. Yeah, it's automatically. Okay, Keurig coffee maker.
All these times that you're saying wait 24 hours, it's only for hot things, right?
Correct. It's good to wait for everything because mistakes can easily happen. But yeah, in other words, if your kid put a spoon in the sink that wasn't hot, it doesn't reset the clock. If it's hot, it would reset the clock. But it's a good idea to say don't put anything in the sink. Put some, an X with masking tape over the sink. You can, but it's best, right, correct. If there are kids at home especially, there's so many variables that it's best to kind of make a decree for the next 24 hours, nobody touch anything. But if they did, it would only be hot that would create the problem. Keurig, you clean well, don't use for 24 hours, remove the K-cup holder and either do a Hagala or Eroy on the holder, either dip it in boiling water or pour boiling water over it, and then you run a kosher for Pesach K-cup in the machine, which will kosher the pin that puts the hole in the cup on the top. So a Keurig coffee maker can be koshered. Okay, I think we've gone through the kitchen. Yes?
What about the urn for Shabbos?
Urn. The urn for Shabbos. So if the urn is never brought to the table, and if the urn is never washed with hot chametz, and if the urn is never used to heat the challah on top of it, then you can use the same urn for Pesach and for the year. If the urn is used for any of those things, it's either washed with hot chametz, or you heat the challah on top of it, or it's brought to the table, it's a small urn, somehow it's brought to the table, then you'd either need a new urn or it'd need to be koshered. Or it would need to be koshered. Okay.
Hot water dispenser?
Your hot water dispenser, pour boiling water over it and over the opening. Yeah. Tablecloths and towels, you put in the laundry with detergent and it's koshered. But that's only true, but vinyl tablecloths, which you can't launder, you can't use on Pesach. Cannot be used on Pesach.
I just want to say the pot that's glass cannot be koshered.
Which thing?
A pot that's not the Israeli pot, the metal.
Yeah, the non-Israeli pot, like the old glass hot plate that has settings, so because it's glass, it can't be koshered. It's the pot which can be. Like a Zephyr Hills water cooler?
Yeah.
Wow, what did you see? What does it say?
It says here you can pour hot water, run seconds, fill over the
tap. Page 27, bottom right.
Of the... Again, I recommend looking at the CRC one, but I just like the picture in the OU one. But, yeah, no, if you never use the hot water, fine. The fear with the hot water is, you let hot water into your oatmeal in a cup, you let hot water into chametz things, so the steam comes up. If you only ever use it for cold, do you just wash it? You're good. Yeah. Any other kitchen questions? Yes. Yeah, so if you want to kosher your silverware, you want to kosher your kiddush cup. First of all, you can go today from 9 till 1 at 9 to 12. Don't come till 1. 9 to 12. Oh, it's 11:20. Oh, we should wrap it up so you can go kosher. You could kosher at Federation for the next 40 minutes. But if you want to kosher at home, it's fairly easy. You take a pot. Could be any pot that wasn't used for 24 hours or a designated pot or a Pesach pot. And you bring the water to a boil. It's not just that it's hot. It has to be male ababuos, which is an onomatopoeia. It's got to be bubbling, really bubbling. And then you drop the silverware one by one. You don't put a whole handful in. You put one by one. And then when you take them out, you run them under cold water. By pouring the boiling water, it purges. It brings the taste out. it supposedly opens its porousness, and by putting under cold water right away, it closes it again. Kiddush cups you have to do because they often get washed with chametz. Or, you know, some people dip the challah in the grape juice and then the challah sits in the grape juice in the cup for more than 24 hours. You didn't get to wash it till Monday. So we kasher our Kiddush cups as well. You cannot kasher too many things at once. The reason is very interesting. One of the methodologies that kashering is working is bittel. The water is 60 times whatever blia, whatever taste is absorbed in. If you've kashered too much at one time, so that there's not the ratio, then that undermines the kashering process. So a few pieces of silverware at a time.
And then what? Empty the water?
You don't have to keep doing that because each time it's nullified, you're back to resetting to 60. But it's if you drop too much at one time, you wouldn't have that ratio at that one moment. Okay, that's how you kasher. Nobody asked me about a barbecue. Very difficult to kasher a barbecue. Buy a grill pan and use the grill pan on your stove on Pesach Chol HaMoed, the one night you wanted to barbecue. Kashering a barbecue is very hard. I don't recommend it. You need a blowtorch. It's very complicated. What else? Anything else in the kitchen? Yes. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Correct. Yeah. It's good. If it's good for Pesach, you're good. If you want to wipe it down on the outside, you want to feel... Yeah. It's fine. Good to go. You're good to go. Rack?
That you put on it, which basically grills it the same way as a regular one, normal one. Can you use it there?
If you clean the inside of your barbecue extremely well,
right,
and then cover it, put it on the highest for an hour,
right,
the inside of the barbecue is kashered.
Okay.
But you would need new grates,
okay,
or you'd need to run the grates through a self-clean cycle in your oven, or you'd need to blowtorch.
If it's covered with the same material...
The covering, I think, is... I don't know if the covering works, because you have the fire hitting the grates from the bottom. Yeah? I think you need to replace it or put the grates through a self-clean cycle.
Okay,
are there product questions? Should I just say it, since one of you are going to ask about the salmon in Costco?
I'm wondering about lactate milk.
Lactate milk. Yeah. So CRC, look here. Yeah, this is what you need. The CRC shopping guide, you have it, and it's in here. It has. Look at lactate. Lactate milk may be used if purchased before Pesach. What else? Yes.
Moisturizer that has oleum.
Moisturizer.
Oleum.
It's inedible. Moisturizer. It's inedible. Not a problem. Yes. On this green piece, you have food list. It has the cat foods that are kosher for Pesach. Correct. It's not your cat?
It's not my cat. No, it's not my cat.
So why are you feeding it?
No, one day it came and was meowing.
It's a stray cat that you're kind enough to feed.
Yes.
Give for Pesach. Cats joining your family for Pesach. So you have a list here. You have a list here of kosher for Pesach cat foods. What else? No, milk and eggs are the only things that if you're not buying kosher for Pesach, you should buy before Pesach. And that has to do with the what the cow ate that's producing the milk, which we're not going to get into now. Then you're good. Correct. If the milk is kosher, buy it. But Publix milk is not kosher for Pesach. Exactly. Exactly.
Almond milk
also. Almond milk you have to buy before Pesach, I believe. Which list is it in?
The yellow, second to last page.
Second to last on the yellow. Almond milk, original. Here's a whole list of almond milks. Long list of almond milks. What else? Almond milk is okay. Correct. Soy milk is kitnios. So that's the problem of kitnios. Depends what your family's minhag is. Kirkland salmon. I texted Linda right before the class. I told her she should really be giving this class, not me. She wrote me back. Kirkland is good. They're on the list I make copies of. Is that on? Is there a fish list here?
Yeah, I saw fish somewhere.
Where's the fish list? Yeah, fresh fish is fine.
The fresh Kirkland salmon is okay?
Yeah, wash it off. And
frozen.
And frozen, yeah.
Fresh Kirkland salmon is okay?
Yeah, just wash
it off. But it's packaged, the one that's packaged.
Yeah, but it's fresh, not frozen.
I'm pretty sure that's okay too. I'll double check that as well. That's on the CRC. There you go. That's it. Any other questions? Good. Good to go. Yep. All right, you can always ask me questions even after the workshop. You can tweet me questions if you want. But I'm happy to help you with any questions you have, but know that the CRC app is your best friend. So download the CRC app or print out that thick CRC booklet. Everyone should have a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, and most importantly, you should have great Simcha this coming Pesach.